Chapter 76. At Lioncop, Ruth found a happiness she had never expected, had not believed existed. Up to this time, her existence had been ordered and determined by an adoring but strict father, and then in the same manner by Ben Goldberg. The few short years with Saul Friedman had been happy, but now they were as unreal as memories of childhood. Always she had been wrapped in a cocoon of wealth, hemmed in by social taboos and the dignity of the family. Even Saul had treated her as a delicate child for whom all decisions must be made. Life had been placid and orderly, but deadly dull. Only twice she had rebelled, once to run away from Pretoria, and again when she had gone to Shaun in the hospital. Boredom had been her constant companion. But now suddenly she was mistress of a complex community. The sensation had been a little overpowering at first, and from habit she had appealed to Shaun for him to make the 50 decisions that each day brought forward. "I'll make a bargain with you," he answered. "You don't tell me how to grow wattle, and I'll not tell you how to run the house. Put the damn sideboard where it looks best." Hesitantly at first, then with growing confidence, and at last with sureness and pride, she made Lioncop into a home of beauty and comfort. The coarse grass and scrub around the homestead fell back to make room for lawns and flower beds. The outer walls of Lioncop gleamed in a crisp new coat of whitewash. Inside, the yellowwood floors shone like polished amber, setting off the vivid Bukhara carpets and draped velvet curtains. After a few disastrous experiments, the kitchens began to yield a succession of meals that moved Michael to raptures, and even Shaun pronounced them edible. Yet with a dozen servants, she had time for other things. To read, to play with Storm, and to ride. Shaun's wedding gift to her was a string of 4 golden palominos. There was time also for long visits from and with Ada Courtney. The two of them established an accord stronger than that of mother and daughter. There was time for dancing and barbecues. There was time for laughter and for long, quiet evenings when she and Shaun sat alone on the wide front stoop or in his study and talked of many things. There was time for love. Her body, hard from riding and walking, was also healthy and hot. It was a sculpture sheathed in velvet and fashioned for love. There was only one dark place in her happiness. Dirk Courtney. When her overtures were met with sullenness, and her small, specially cooked gifts were rejected, she realized the cause of his antagonism. She sensed the bitter jealousy which was eating like a canker behind those lovely eyes and the passionately beautiful face. For days she prepared what she would say to him. Then she found the opportunity when he came into the kitchens while she was alone. He saw her and turned quickly to leave, but she stopped him. "Oh, Dirk, please don't go. I want to discuss something with you." He came back slowly and leaned against the table. She saw how tall he had grown in the last year. His shoulders were thickening into the shape of manhood, and his legs were strong and tapered from the narrow hips that he thrust forward in a calculated insolence. "Dirk," she began and paused. Suddenly, she was unsure of herself. This was not a child, as she had imagined. There was a sensuality in that beautiful face she found disturbing. He carried his body with awareness, moving like a cat. Suddenly she was afraid, and she swallowed jerkily before she went on. I know how difficult it's been for you since Storm and I came to live here. I know how much you love your father, how much he means to you, but..." She spoke slowly, her carefully prepared speech forgotten, so that she had to grope for the words to explain. She tried to show him that they were not in competition for Shaun's love, that all of them, Ruth, Michael, Storm, and Dirk, formed a whole, that their interests did not overlap, but that each of them gave to Shaun and received from him a different kind of love. When at last she faltered into silence, she knew he had not listened, nor tried to understand. "Dirk, I like you, and I want you to like me." With a thrust of his buttocks against the table, Dirk straightened up. He smiled then and let his eyes move down over her body, slowly. "Can I go now?" he asked, and Ruth stiffened. Then she knew there was no compromise, that she would have to fight him. Yes, Dirk, you may go, she answered. She knew with sudden clarity that he was evil, and if she lost this contest, he would destroy her and her child. In that moment, she was no longer afraid. Cat-like, Dirk seemed to sense the change in her. For a moment, she thought she saw a flicker of doubt, of uncertainty in his eyes. Then he turned away and sauntered out of the kitchen. She guessed that it would come soon, but not as soon as it did. Every afternoon, Ruth would ride out into the plantations with Storm's pony on a lead rein beside her. They made a game of finding Sean and Michael, following the labyrinth of roads that crisscrossed through the blocks of trees, guided by the vague directions of the gangs of Zulus, until finally they ran them down and delivered the canteens of coffee and the hamper of sandwiches. Then all four of them would picnic on the soft carpet of dead leaves beneath the trees. This afternoon, dressed in riding habit and carrying the hamper, Ruth came out into the kitchen yard. The young Zulu nursemaid was sitting in the shade of the kitchen wall, flirting with one of the grooms. Storm was nowhere in sight, and Ruth asked sharply, "Where is Miss Storm?" "She went with Inkozana Dirk," and Ruth felt the tingling premonition of danger. "Where are they?" And the nursemaid pointed vaguely in the direction of the stables and outbuildings that sprawled away down the back slope of the hill. "Come with me." Ruth dropped the hamper and ran with her skirts gathered in one hand. She reached the first row of stables and hurried down them, glancing into each stall as she passed. Then into the feed rooms with the big concrete bins and the smell of oats and molasses and chopped lucerne mixing with the sharp tang of dung and dubbined leather. Out again into the sunlight, running for the barns. Storm screamed in terror just once, but high and achingly clear, so the silence afterwards quivered with the memory of it. The harness room. Ruth swirled in her run. Oh, God, please, no, don't let it happen. Please, please. She reached the open door of the harness room. It was gloomy and cool within the thick stone walls, and for a moment the scene made no sense to Ruth. Her back wedged into the far corner, Storm stood with hands lifted to shield her face, small fingers rigid, splayed open, spread like the tip feathers of a bird's wing. Her body shook silently with her sobs. In front of Storm, squatting on his heels, Dirk leaned forward with one hand outstretched, as though he offered a gift. He was laughing. Then Ruth saw the thing in Dirk's hand move, and she froze with horror. It uncoiled from around his wrist and slowly reached out towards Storm, its head cocked back in a half-loop of its body, tiny black tongue vibrating between the grinning pink lips. Ruth screamed, and Dirk jumped to his feet and spun to face her, with his right hand hidden behind his back. From the corner, Storm darted across the room and buried her face in Ruth's skirts, weeping piteously. Ruth picked her up and held her tight against her shoulder, but she never took her eyes off Dirk's face. "It's only a roi slung," Dirk laughed again, but nervously. "They're harmless, I was only having a joke." He brought the snake out from behind his back, dropped it onto the stone flag floor, and crushed its head under the heel of his riding boot. He kicked it away against the wall. Then, with an impatient gesture, he brushed the black curls from his forehead and made to leave the room. Ruth stepped across to block his path. "Nanny, take Miss Storm back to the house." Gently, Ruth handed the child to the Zulu nursemaid and closed the door after them and slid the bolt across. Now it was darker in the room. Two square shafts of sunlight filled with moving dust motes fell from the high windows, and the quiet was spoiled only by the sound of Ruth's laboured breathing. "I was only having a joke," Dirk repeated, and grinned defiance at her. "I suppose you'll run and tell my father." The walls of the room were studded with wooden pegs from which were suspended the harness and saddlery. Beside the door hung Sean's rawhide stock whips, 8 foot of braided leather tapering from the butt handle into nothingness. Ruth lifted one down from the rack and flicked the lash out to lie upon the floor between them. "No, Dirk, I'm not going to tell your father. This thing is between you and me alone." "What are you going to do?"
"I'm going to settle it."
"How?"
Still grinning, he placed his hands on his hips. Beneath rolled sleeves, his upper arms bulged smooth and brown, as though they had been freshly oiled.
"Like this,"
Ruth flicked her skirt aside and stepped forward. Using the whip underhand, she sent the lash snaking out to coil around Dirk's ankle, and immediately she jerked back on it. Taken completely off balance, Dirk went over backwards. His head hit the wall as he fell, and he lay stunned. To give herself space in which to wield the whip, Ruth moved into the center of the room. Her anger was cold as dry ice. It gave strength to arms already finely muscled from riding, and it seared away all mercy. Now she was a female animal fighting for the survival of herself and her child. She had learned to use a stock whip in the process of becoming an expert horsewoman, and her first blow split Dirk's shirt from the shoulder to the waist. He shouted with anger and rolled onto his knees. The next blow cut down from the base of his neck along his spine, paralyzing him in the act of rising. The next, across the back of both knees, knocked his legs out from under him. On his belly, Dirk reached for the pitchfork against the wall, but braided leather exploded around his wrist. He shouted again and rolled on his side to nurse the hand against his chest. Ruth hit him, and he writhed across the floor towards her like a wounded leopard, with its hindquarters shattered by buckshot. Step by step, Ruth retreated before him, and the long lash hissed and cracked. Without mercy, she beat him until his shirt hung in tatters from his waist and shoulders, exposing the smooth white skin with the fat crimson welts superimposed upon it. She beat him until his shouts turned to shrieks, and finally to sobbing. She beat him until he lay shivering, moaning, moving feebly with his blood sprinkled in dark blobs on the stone paving around him. Then she folded the whip and turned to open the door. In the stable yard, standing in silent curiosity, were gathered all the grooms and the household servants. Ruth selected four of them. "Take the Inkozana to his room." Then to one of the grooms. "Ride to Inkosi. Tell him to come quickly." Sean came quickly. He came wild with anxiety and nearly tore the door off Dirk's bedroom in his haste. He stopped dead on the threshold and stared aghast at Dirk's back. Stripped to the waist, Dirk lay face downwards on his bed, and Ruth worked over him with a sponge. On the table beside her stood a steaming basin, and the pungent reek of antiseptic filled the room. "Good God, what happened to him?" "I beat him with a stock whip," Ruth answered him calmly, and Sean gaped at her, then dropped his gaze to Dirk.
"You did that? Yes?"
The anger tightened Sean's mouth.
"Jesus God, you've cut him to pieces. You've half killed him."
And he glanced at Ruth.
"Why?"
"It was necessary." The absolute assurance and lack of remorse in her reply confused Sean. He was suddenly uncertain in his anger.
"What did he do?"
"I can't tell you that. It is something private between us. You must ask Dirk." Sean crossed quickly to the bed and knelt beside it.
"Dirk, Dirkie, my boy, what happened? What did you do?"
And Dirk lifted his face from the pillow and looked at his father.
"It was a mistake. It doesn't matter."
Then he buried his face in the pillow once more, and his voice was muffled. So Sean had an excuse for not believing that he had heard correctly.
"What did you say?"
he demanded. And there was a short delay before Dirk replied quite distinctly.
"I said it was my fault."
"Yes, that's what I thought you said." Sean stood up with a puzzled expression on his face.
"Well, I don't know why you sent for me, Ruth. You seem to have the situation fairly well in hand."
He moved to the door, looked back as though he were going to speak, then, changing his mind, he shook his head and went out. That night, in the quiet, exhausted minutes before sleep, Sean murmured against her cheek,
"I think you did today what I should have done years ago."
And then, with a sleepy chuckle,
"At least there's no doubt in anyone's mind as to who is the mistress of Lion Kop."